All right. Today is Monday, April 22nd, 2024, and you're listening to the Ask a Christian podcast. I'm your host, Nate. All right. We get into people are like, Buddhism's a philosophy. It's so much better than Christianity. Except if you set yourself on fire. So I'm not 100% if this guy's like a Buddhist monk, but it seems very much like it. Anyway, but we're talking about the guy who looks very much like what you'd think a Buddhist monk looks like. And he sets himself on fire, I think, last Friday outside Trump's thing, apparently because he is protesting that, you know, Trump and Biden are both old or something. He left a manifesto somewhere. I don't know if it got burned up or if people were analyzing that, but maybe someday we'll know. Anyway, so don't set yourself on fire. And someone's like, well, it's better than killing other people. Well, sure. But I mean, is it crazy to think also don't kill yourself? Like, Christians are just like, hey, Jesus, repent, believe the gospel, have eternal life. I mean, I guess, you know, that's my self-peace. I mean, I guess if your inner peace makes you immolate yourself, there's got to be a better way. And there is. Jesus. Okay, so it's a pretty docile day. Man, I caught up on some sleep I'd been missing. Seems like everyone else missed their coffee. It was good. It was a very chill conversation for a while. And then it picks up. We talk about parenting children, from children to teens, the teen years, what to look out for. Apparently, my days are numbered. Then we get into sex trafficking and guns. So sex trafficking, where's most prevalent? How do people stop it? Are they covering it up? Yada, yada. And then, Second Amendment. That's a good one. So there's very pro and anti-Second Amendment seeming people. God and guns, am I right? Praise the Lord and pass the ammunition. Where does Nate stand? With the Constitution. That's where Nate stands. Anyway, so yes, it's a good discussion today, all around. That's it. Share these links. See you tomorrow.
Wouldn't be surprised, because it seemed it was only on like some very, very obscure news sources. Not a lot of mainstream people. Wonder why. But I guess Friday, outside the Trump trial area, there was a bunch of like Buddhist monks, and I don't know if they were protesting something. Like, no one's really clear in the story, but like the images, and there's video. It's like all these people dressed in like Buddhist monks, except the robes are kind of yellow. So maybe it's like some offshoot of Buddha. Anyway, it's a bunch of monk looking guys, and they're all gathered around this one guy who's in a very prayerful, meditative posture. And then he dumps gas all over himself and sets himself on fire. In the middle of New York.
I didn't know there were Buddhist monks around him. There were?
Yeah, if you see that video, there's like a whole bunch of people who look just like him. The same robes, the same shaved head. Like, they're all standing in the background. And no one can quite figure out if he's protesting something to do with Trump. Because it seems like Buddhist monks aren't inherently engaged in U.S. politics. Or if it was something else that just happened to be that way. But I don't know, man. It makes you wonder, right? For all these people that kind of like... I'm like, I don't need Christianity. Buddhism is a peaceful philosophy. It's the way of life. I'm like, okay, well, I'm sure, you know, there's a lot of Buddhists who don't immolate themselves. But I mean, you know, there's that guy. So I don't know. I mean, maybe
I guess counter to that is he didn't put anyone else on fire.
I guess, but geez. I mean, how about just don't put anyone on fire?
You know, I read some of his manifesto. He basically fought Trump and Biden were together in some global conspiracy to destroy the world. Like, they were collaborating together.
So set yourself on fire? I don't know, man.
It was his way of bringing attention to it.
I mean, some people just run for office. Well, yeah. I mean, you know, until you just said that, like... No one had any idea what the guy's message was. There's like, he sets himself on fire. And so, I mean, maybe he should have had a billboard or something with his message. I mean, if you're going to, you know, burn yourself alive, you want to make sure that message gets out there.
He had a pamphlet manifesto that he left near him.
Okay.
Nobody make any jokes about that being a hot mess.
Well, I mean, good thing the manifesto was out of the burn radius. Otherwise, that'd be really bad, right? You have this like whole well-crafted like thing that's going to change the world if people just read it, and it gets too close to the fire and burns up with you. That'd be a waste. Hey, Dippity. Hey, Joanna. Good morning. But let's see. I think that's all I got.
Is he going to survive, though? I think he was in critical condition. Did you hear anything about if he's going to survive or not?
Oh, I did not. I just assumed he was toast. No one laugh.
Well, he might live and then run for office one day, to your point, Nate.
I mean, that fire lasted for, like, over 30 seconds, and he was not moving. So I just assumed he was gone.
Serendipity, were you excited to see that Marjorie Greene Taylor was defeated? Or Taylor Greene, whatever her name is. Sorry, yeah. Or she was defeated this weekend?
Yes.
Wait, there was a vote?
Yeah, the bill passed with like 75% of the House.
Oh, I thought you were talking about like her position in Congress. Yeah. I thought you were saying there was like going to be like a special vote for her position or something. So, okay, so yes, yeah, so you just lost the.
I'd be like, you know, dancing in the streets or something.
You're talking about the bill to oust the speaker guy, right? Is that what you're talking about?
No, the Ukraine, Israel.
Oh, right. Okay.
She bill. Was trying to stop. Yeah.
I mean, does anyone think that's a good idea, though? Like, I don't know, man. It's just gross.
It's a great idea only, Nate, if they now end up negotiating and bringing this to an end, right? Because if the bill didn't pass, there would be no reason for Putin to negotiate because he has nothing to worry about. But with the bill passing now, that's a nice kind of rattle saber. And I think that they can negotiate it and bring this thing to an end now.
But if it hasn't worked in the previous bills of like hundred billions of dollars, why would this be any different? And it's just like the slap in the face of everyone. Like I'm more irritated about this than I have been before. And I don't know why, because even in that stupid omnibus thing, like there was some stuff for Americans. There is not one single thing, not a penny for America at all. Even policies I disagree with, there's zero money. It's Taiwan, Israel, and Ukraine. It's like three places that are about as far away on the planet as you can get from us.
Well, there's money for the American economy because you realize like that Ukraine bill is mostly for American military contractors to give them like old weapons that we don't use anymore, right? You realize that's like the majority of where that funding goes to.
Oh, and to launder back to our politicians, I forgot. I guess it is good for some of the American economy.
Emphasize laugh, huh?
Oh, I don't know, man. I'm just sick of it all.
My favorite thing that MTG said was when she got mad at him for saying, well, he's trying to pass bills with both parties supporting it. That's like, for as long as I remember the last 200 and something years, what the Speaker of the House is supposed to do.
Well, it's how you look at it. It's like, look, if he passed something that both parties agreed to, and it was something, I don't know, decent, like we're gonna do something to help economic strain of Americans in a way that doesn't say that and then like do the opposite, but like actually does that. Or, you know, give everyone across the board a tax break. Or, I don't know, something that generally, like, most Americans would be like, hey, that benefits me and my family. Wonderful, guys. Good job. But when it's like, you know, like, liberals will have, like, their people who they're like, no, they're too moderate. They suck of their own party. And conservatives are like, oh, we have the rhinos and they suck. Blah, blah, blah. So, like, when you have the groups that both parties don't like of their respective groups all passing stuff together... That's not like together good. That's like together bad. So it's like, look, that just shows like what people call like a uniparty. Like when, you know, factions on the right and left get together and basically just do something completely not in or contrary to the interest of the citizens.
Well, I guess my only challenge with that is 43% of Americans now identify as independent, 29% Republican and 28% Democrat, I believe. So that 43% independents technically probably like the scenario that you just said.
I don't know. Someone should do a poll on that. You should foster, you know, you should marshal the powers of your PR and do some kind of poll. Because I can't imagine, especially independents, thinking, hey, 100 and whatever billion dollars for, you know, three countries that aren't directly going to benefit Americans. That's why we're independents. Because Republicans and Democrats cannot get their act together. And I mean, I'm like an independent in every way, except, I mean, technically, you know, in Florida, you have to be a declared party member to vote in the primaries. So, I mean, I check the Republican box just so I can have a say in the primary, because the Republicans are going to be more closely aligned to what I am that has a chance of winning. But I mean, yeah, just traditional conservative. Good Lord, I never thought I would put myself in that box. But I mean, that's where I am, just pretty much across the board, traditional conservative. And yeah, I can't stand the Republican Party either. But I mean, on a scale of like, you know, 1 to 100, if Democrats evil meter is like 99.9 or like breaking that meter, I mean, Republicans are like, I don't know, 60, 55. So, I mean, I really am not happy with them either. Well, anyone go to church this week? No? Adam, what's up? Are you driving today? You're driving every day.
Yeah, I'm driving. I had an interesting an interesting weekend because sorry. I was sick all weekend, but I got well long enough for us to have my daughter's dedication Sunday, and so yeah, but I'm trying to get better from the rough weekend I had being sick.
Well, rest well. No one tell Chris, but I saw a new Reformed church apparently has opened in my area.
Oh, so you missed the funniest conversation last week about Calvinism, Nate. It was like in Roger's Healthy Debate Rooms, and this guy, Norm, like, didn't understand anything about Calvinism, and so he'd be like, are Mormons Calvinists? Are Catholics Calvinists? Like, he was trying to figure it out. It was so funny.
Let's go with that. Yes, Mormons are Calvinists. What's up, Dibbity? You were saying something? I thought.
I don't remember.
It was like 2 seconds ago.
I'm driving and drinking coffee. And
if you just would have stopped, like, I'm driving and drinking.
And doing all the things. CEO, he distracted me with this whole Norm questioning Calvinism thing, because I can just hear Norm right now. That's hysterical.
Who's Norm? Surprise, I don't know someone.
You don't know El Normo?
No. Do I have to, like, go to other rooms to know these people?
Yeah, probably. I'm surprised.
I hear this is a dangerous thing.
It is a dangerous thing. It certainly can be.
Yeah, Nate, for you to experience the political side of Clubhouse, just go to Roger's room sometimes. It can be a bit entertaining. And if you ever just want to see the depravity of men, go to the Chillism political room. They have no moderation rules at all. It is a hot wreck.
I thought this was the political room.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Hello, Wim. Good morning. Well, I mean, last Friday was like very little moderation on my part.
I think it would be kind of hard to moderate something like that, Nate. I mean, honestly, it just had to play itself out. Because it's been going on for quite a while anyway.
What happened?
The people who were like, I guess, fighting with each other over Calvin and Arminian, and people were like accusing people of mocking like a guy's dead kid. I guess that's a thing. So they found their way into here, and I just let it go. It is pretty tame considering the content, but yeah. Except to get like tons of people in here, and you know, Chris did make a point. He's like, look, when there's a Bible study, there's like four people. When there's a bunch of just gossip and drama, there's like 100.
I don't know. We've had some pretty big Bible study rooms too, though. We've probably had 40 in there anyway. It's a pretty big room for a Bible study.
I wish we could have more Bible study rooms and stuff like that instead of, you know, all this fighting and arguing over stuff that doesn't matter. It's pointless.
Oh, by the way, Nate, Serendipity is the most versatile person on Clubhouse. She's probably the only person who would be ranked top 10 for Christians and political people.
Well, we talk about a lot of political stuff. Dipity, you're kind of quiet. Are you holding back on us? What are your deep political thoughts?
I have to hold back on most of my political.
Because you say unchristian things because you get so into it?
I can.
And you just let loose in other rooms?
Not even necessarily. Well liked in both circles. Sorry. I sit on my.
What's your most controversial political opinion?
Most controversial. Often, right now, I'm really frustrated.
You're cutting out. I think the Lord is saving you from saying something.
See?
Well, CEO, I think he tries to be. I think CEO tries to be more middle of the line than he really is. I think that's because you just try to split it right down the middle. But I think you probably secretly have more opinionated ideas one way or another. Would that be fair?
I agree with that, but I think that's a good tactic. I think it's a very good move. I think that when you can at least give the appearance of being reasonable and well-rounded and well thought out, people are more likely to listen to you.
You're saying I'm unreasonable?
No.
Well, sometimes rooms, Nate, because there is this room where like the liberals were just ragging on Republicans for going to Chicago, and I said, I was like, well, what's wrong with conservatives trying to campaign in Chicago? Don't you want them to be aware of issues in the African-American community, and maybe they'll be more mindful of them over time?
Did you get
sort of moderate tone ended up like making people leave the room
from you saying that?
They just wanted to yell at conservatives, and because I said something reasonable, it made them like bored.
Yeah, they roll their eyes when people like CEO and me speak, because I think we do tend to walk that line pretty well.
Wait, you try to be reasonable too? I thought the whole thing was you're like a crazy person when you get going.
I am a crazy person when I get going. I just don't get going very often.
A crazy person for the middle of the road?
No. I have a lot of very unpopular opinions.
Oh my gosh. This is CEO, spill the beans.
Give us one.
What'd she do? I thought you knew. It sounded like you guys were in the same rooms a lot. I
heard her massively unpopular opinion, though, so I do want to hear this.
Let's see. Some of my more unpopular opinions. I'm a radical traditionalist. Like, I do not like feminism in any way, shape, or form. I'm extremely anti-feminism. I believe in traditional roles. They don't like to hear that in political spaces. You know, I think that there are things that men are better equipped mentally and physically to do, and there are things that women are better equipped mentally to do. These opinions do not go over very well. I also have a pretty radical opinion about the abortion topic, too, that most people don't agree with.
Oh, what is that? For it?
I don't believe that abortion should be legislated in any way, shape, or form. I think it's a medical decision that should be between a doctor and the patients. I don't think that there's any way that you will ever account for the what-ifs, the what-hours, the what-ands of a situation like that. And I think that most people, not all, there's certainly extremes on both ends of the spectrum, but I think that most people agree that there are at least some times where, unfortunately, it's a procedure that's necessary. Whether it's to save a mother's life, what, you know, and I just don't think it's something that should be legislated in the law. I think it's a medical decision.
So basically, like, if the doctor is willing to do it, then you're just good with whatever that goes. So if the doctor's like, we got to do it to save the life, or we got to do this, it's completely elective, but you're a paying customer, I'm a doctor, I'll do it. So that's kind of, you just default to whatever medical staff will do the procedure.
Well, I think that doctors, you know, that's oftentimes the argument that I get, Nate, is, oh, so just if the doctor's okay with it being elective, that's fine. And I don't think that's it at all. I think that people discount the fact that, you know, our physicians take a Hippocratic oath to do no harm. And, you know, I think that to some extent, like, we have to rely on them to do that. And yeah, I think an elective abortion is not doing no harm, you know, but I think that a doctor and the patient are probably the most informed and the most knowledgeable about whether or not medical necessity necessitates the need for a termination, you know?
Yeah, I wouldn't be an old judge. I was just asking if you let it lie with the medical people, except that do no harm. Like, I mean, maybe that mattered sometime, but I mean, look at COVID. It seems like people are like, okay, well, you know, we know this is bad. We know this is really bad. But, you know, we're going to do a little harm and line our pockets while we're doing it. So maybe just a little harm is okay. But I don't know. I mean, I guess my unpopular thought would be, on one hand, maybe on both hands, look, if you want an abortion and you're like, what, if you just ban abortion across the board, then blah, blah, blah. That means women are just going to have to go to back alleys and use coat hangers. My unpopular thought to that would be, well, if you want to murder your baby, I guess you should assume some risk.
Well.
All right, are we done here today? E-bike, say something awful to make people realize
it. That was pretty good, Nate. But I actually thought Trump took a really good stance on this. Just let the states decide, because every state has different culture. That makes a lot more sense than the federal government dictating it.
I agree with that, CEO. I think the one problem that I have is you have these little backwoods hillbilly conservative border states like in Texas pulling the legislation that they're pulling. And I'm appalled at that, because this is why women will come out in droves during the election and always vote pro-choice. And women, you know, the modern day soccer mom, let's face it, that's generally who sways the election one way or the other. And they're going to come out in droves when you have these little hillbilly counties passing legislation where you can't use their interstates that are the major thoroughfare out of the state of Texas into a state where abortion is allowed. And you tell people that it's illegal for you to drive on their roads to take a patient out of state to procure an abortion. Like, you're interfering with our constitutional right to traverse between states, you know. And it's just, it's not okay. Like, there comes a point where, like, you're pushing it too far. And I feel like that's way too far.
Well, and also there's the, you know, there's like the moral side. That's like, look, if you're a Christian, you ban it 100% no matter what. Okay, but then what? Let's just say you have a 100% ban on all abortions, no matter what. Then how far do you have to go to be a real Christian? If it's banned 100%, but then someone does it anyway, what's the penalty? So how big of a penalty do you have to impose to be a real Christian? The death penalty? Well, now you're killing people. Okay, maybe that's a little heavy-handed. So what do you impose? Like life in prison, $10,000 fine, $50 fine? It's like, oh, well, it's banned 100%, but if you find a doctor to do it, he's going to pay $50. Great. Add $50 to the price of your abortion. So, I mean, you're always going to be able to, like, move – I guess, is that moving the goalposts? You're always going to be able to move it and just, like, keep going. Be like, fine. Like, under that, like, New York could be like, fine, to appease the Christian people, we're going to have 100% ban no matter what. But, you know, if you find someone to break this ban and do it anyways, you know, pay $10. It's like, there. Now all the Christians are appeased because it's completely banned and completely outlawed. But that everyone wants abortion is appeased because if you break this law – you know, pay $10, for example. Like you can always just keep moving things around.
Do you know how when you become a Christian, they say you're born again in the spirit? When
what?
Oh. You know when you become a Christian, they say you're born again in the spirit?
I mean, it's what Jesus says, but yeah.
When you become an atheist, do you have a spiritual abortion?
Well, that depends who you
ask. No, it just means you're going to die twice.
Yeah, I mean, if you, well, you said become an atheist. So is that talking about, are you saying people who say they were Christians but are now atheists, or?
Well, it could be anything, really, I guess.
Well, because you've got the crowd that if you say, well, I was a Christian, but now I'm an atheist, half the crowd will say, no, you were never a Christian. So you can't be spiritually aborted because you can't go from Christian to non-Christian, because if you were a Christian, you'd still be a Christian. But then you've got half of the people that would probably agree with what you said.
All right. I got a question for everyone. Is the Bible a public policy book?
Go further.
No.
Should it be? That's my question.
The Bible is about God, and then God informs us as to, like, what's the right thing to do. But I think people sometimes try to turn the Bible into God, but the Bible just, like, tells us about God.
And also then who comes up with, you know, the one true interpretation? So if you stick to the big things, it's basically like any atheist society, like, you know, murder is bad, you know, I don't know, cheating your neighbor out of stuff is bad. Fraud is bad. Like, I think most of the world will agree with, like, the big points. But when it gets to, like, the nitty-gritty stuff, like abortion, right? You may have some that are like, no, it's between you and God. Like, you know, work out your salvation with fear and trembling. Your salvation with fear and trembling. So you shouldn't get an abortion. But if you want to, you're going to have to account to God for that. We shouldn't force you. And then the other people are like, no. Clearly, it says here that, and then whatever they say is not clear. It's like, look, this is always bad. This is always wrong, and we need to force you because reasons. So who is in charge of deciding what the Bible really says on the finer points?
Don't you think, like, a parable could have multiple correct interpretations too? Or, like, maybe God has a message for certain people, and then for other people has a different message, like the Holy Spirit works all that out somehow.
Well, I think parables usually have one, like, very, very prominent general meaning, but there's plenty that you can also get, like, secondary meanings to.
CEO, I'd like to know what you think about that question.
Yeah, I expect and I'm thankful that, you know, political leaders will bring their personal perspectives, which often includes Christianity, into how they see the world. However, I don't think the Bible was intended to be a public policy book, and Jesus basically told us as much in terms of age to around Caesar. So I don't think people should say we should have blank, because that's the biblical thing on it. But I, again, expect people to be influenced by it and for it to guide what they recommend.
Do you know who Reverend Thomas Hooker is?
I don't.
No. Who is that?
He was the one whose sermon inspired the Fundamental Orders of Connecticut in 1639. He's oftentimes referred to as the father of democracy because our Constitution was modeled after his sermon.
And what did he say that you most connect with?
You know, his sermon had like a very strong emphasis on the people conjoining themselves as like one public state or commonwealth. And like the whole premise behind his sermon was, you know, in an effort to preserve the liberty and purity of the gospel. And, you know, it's an interesting read. It's been a while since I've read up on him, but he was the founder, I guess, of Connecticut during the original colonies. And he's credited as, yeah, the Constitution kind of being based on that fundamental orders that he established for Connecticut. I just thought it was interesting. He basically says that God set the example for democracy with the state of Israel, trying to get them to rule themselves as a people without a king. Of course, they didn't like that. They wanted a king, and you know how that story played out. But yeah, that was kind of the premise behind it, was that he kind of established Israel to be a self-governing nation, the first.
He wanted to be the king. But Israel wanted to be like the other nations. And then God was always making compromises with Israel.
Well, happy Earth Day. I'd like to know if anyone's doing any Earth Day things.
I'm going to water my plant now since you said that.
Yeah, I remembered it was Earth, or I knew it was Earth Day, and then I forgot until you just reminded me. So I guess thank you for doing your part for the Earth, for reminding us. How are you doing, Joanna?
Good. I'd like to go around and ask anyone, what's your favorite thing about living on the Earth? Maybe CEO can go first.
Seeing what's going to happen next. I think life's very fascinating, and I think the thing I would miss the most about it, even going to heaven, is just missing seeing what happens next.
Anyone else? E-bike?
Oh, sorry, I'm answering a message. Go ahead.
What do you like about living on the Earth?
Earth! Fire! Wind! Water! Go! Captain Planet! I am Captain Planet!
That's my answer.
Love that. I love that. Well, so many things, but that you can take a seed from anything that you get, like a cucumber, like I just did. Planted in soil, and it grows. And these are exactly the minerals and ingredients we need to sustain life. I think it's incredible.
Someone was saying, like, oh, what was it? It was like an ounce of, like, lettuce seeds can yield, like, or however it works, is like, yields, like, 74,000 plants.
Is it?
And it was something like that. It was like some seed company guy from like Canada was doing a talk, and it was like crazy. It was like, I forget, but like he went by ounces of like seeds or however you get the different plants and stuff. And he was saying like, for 1 ounce of this, it can make these many new crops or plants. And it went through like apple trees, orchards, like, and it was amazing to see like how for 1 ounce of whatever we're talking about, it can make like, you know, multiple thousands of additional crops and plants and trees and everything.
Yes, I just germinated a lemon seed. Everyone knows when you squeeze a lemon, there's those little, you know, seeds are always in your way. Germinate them, plant them. One seed, 120 lemons on a tree on a good day.
Wow. Except the bad part is, you know, like now, because of all the like GMO nonsense. I mean, if it's something that Monsanto's got their hands on, then, you know, they can like sterilize the seeds or make it without seeds completely. So you can't do that. So, you know, Earth left to its own devices. That's great. That's what's kept us going for a long, long time. But look what happens when man gets their hands on it. This is where Captain Planet should come in and regulate. Yeah, so if you're lucky enough to find some untampered with seeds, then good job. If not, well, I guess you have to keep paying like $8 an apple. Did I just take a good topic and make it sour?
Well, I'll have a Bible question.
Yes, please.
Thank you. Sands of the sea. Does that sound familiar to anybody? It's a pretty common verse. Let's see. So when God spoke to Abraham, he said, I will make your seed as many as the sands of the sea. And then I like to see when things are repeated. So in Revelation, after the millennial reign, and it says, and then they shall go out and deceive the nations in the four corners of the earth, Gog and Magog, and gather them for battle, the number of whom is as the sands of the sea. Well, I found that interesting because I always like Revelation. I ponder over Revelation since I was very young. I have a book called Revelation. And does this resonate with anybody as far as what do you think is the number is the sands of the sea?
A lot. Yeah. Like too many to readily count. Like you just see a sea of people, and it doesn't mean that they don't have a numerical number, but it means they're so plentiful and there that it just like looks like one giant mass, so there's no way to count it. So people are like, oh, you mean you can't count it? Because everything that has a number can logically, ontologically, blah, 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 be counted. It's like, no, shut up. It just means you have such a mass of people. It's like trying to count. You just can't count them. It's just a sea of people. So if you have everyone line up single file and walk one by one, sure, you could eventually count them. But when they're all just in a mass, like as far as you can see, like just, you know, filling a giant valley or whatever, or look at a crowd in a concert. You can't even like count a crowd in a concert because they're just so many people. It's like an organic thing just like moving around. I think that's what that means.
So this is after the 1,000-year reign, after people have seen all the good that God's going to do, right, in the return of Christ. And after Satan gets loosed from his prison, this is how many people are still going to rebel against God. I should have backed up and said the scripture prior. This number is how many people are still going to go with Satan in Revelation 20. Isn't that incredible?
It is, in an unfortunate way.
Well, my friend says, let them go. We don't want them anyway. Oh, that's so mean. I will
who
go back
that?
To the audience. A friend of mine.
Oh.
I won't say who. Yeah. Good, let them go. We don't need...
Well,
sorry.
I mean, how many times have we heard, like, maybe these are the people, maybe it's more than I think, but, you know, maybe these are the people we talk to who's like, I don't care if there is a God. If it's the Christian God, then I'm just going to tell him he could just send me straight to hell. I don't even care. I'll never worship him. Well, maybe there's more people like that than we think. So it's like, all right, well, I guess it's your choice. Have fun. Yeah, it's not good, but...
Just goes to testify to the nature of man.
Yeah.
It is consistent.
Steph, here's your chance to jump on stage, and you're not taking it. Anyone else have a question about anything? Topic question? This is a very docile day. Like, yeah, I think I got too much sleep last night, so I'm just kind of in a meditative state.
I just wanted to ask Nate if you've ever had a moment where you just said something to an atheist because you knew it would make them mad.
Not that I can think of. Usually if I do something, I try to just run something in real fast in a way that makes me laugh and a couple people who are quick will get it. But I just kind of do it in like a run by. So I don't intentionally usually try to make people mad. I'm trying to think of an example. Oh boy. I may have to think a while. But yeah, usually I do things that are kind of like snarky and sly. So it's like, you know, when I'm talking about like the rainbow people, I'd be like, look, so I don't know, man, in the LGBTPS community, blah, 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 blah. And then people are what they're like, what? What's PES? I'm like, ah. You were quick. You got that. Good job.
You know, I, Nate, I tried to ask somebody in the LGBTQ movement a question, but for some reason they could never give me a straight answer.
That's funny. Steph, I don't see D. Was D here? Steph, I got too much sleep because I previously got too little sleep. My dog was having night terrors or something. You got barfed on 4 times this morning? This would really be easier if you just talked. I mean, now we need to hear the story. Joanna, were you saying something? I thought I heard someone chime in. No. CEO, did that answer your question? Have you ever said anything to just make atheists mad? Or
yes, I did it. I did that last week. Joanna was in a room, actually. We were with Donald, and we were talking about created versus formed. Were you in that room, Joanna?
Yes.
Okay. So Donald has this thing, Nate, where he goes like, nothing's ever been created. Things are only formed. So therefore, there can be no God because nothing's ever been created. And so I said, okay, Donald, well then, like, you know, you can just take the word created and substitute it for formed the way that you're creating it, and everything was formed. He got so mad. He's like, Christians can't say it. You can't say that. That's ridiculous. Blah, 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 and just yelled for like 15 minutes. It was so entertaining.
Wow.
But isn't created or creating or something like that, isn't that just a synonym? Well, Lord have mercy. Thank you, Jesus. Hallelujah. Isn't that just the same as saying formed?
It kind of is, right? So like I was halfway joking and halfway being serious because one interpretation of creating is you're making something new from something previously formed, right? So, yeah, so you definitely could say that. But I was more so saying it just to mess with him, and he snapped out.
Well, mission accomplished, I guess. I just hate that argument, though, because it's like, well, look, you could go back as far as, you know, where they say the singularity is. What then? Like, all they have is, you know, man's wisdom, where they're like, well, it came from the singularity, which means it just had to be somewhere before that. Well, you may as well say God exists, because you don't know where, you can't prove it. I think it kind of makes sense, the logic follows, but you can't prove it in a way that's meaningful to anyone. You just have to assume that if all this matter came from the singularity thing, it had to exist somewhere before that, but where? The other side of a black hole, another universe, sure, maybe, but you can't prove it. So stop acting like they have a high ground.
I think at that point, though, like, honestly, they're just, like, they're finding something to argue about for the sake of arguing. Because to argue about whether created or formed is two separate things, or if it's the same thing, that's just arguing arguing without a purpose. That's just arguing for the sake of arguing at that time, at that point, I feel like. I mean, that's just me. Maybe I need to be smarter, but I just feel like that's what it is.
Oh, and my closing line to dial him up more, Nate, was that, well, it already existed in God's mind, so it wasn't created.
Well, yeah, sure, but I mean, we can just like keep making claims, right? Like, oh, matter totally existed; it totally came from the singularity. But God made that. Prove a God. Prove matter came before the singularity. So. It could just keep going back and back, like infinite regress. And whatever it did, like, I mean, we can always one-up their claim, because it's like, well, matter had, I mean, there has to be a point where something just happened. And then what made it happen? God did it. You can't do that! Well, you also can't do what you're doing, so why don't we just reset, and I'll say, I believe in God, and you should too, and here's the reasons why, so just repent and live forever. Doesn't cost you any money. So... no problem. And then you can just be like, okay, that's a good idea. Or I don't believe in a God because of whatever logical reason you have, which is they just claim the lack of belief. I don't believe that. But I mean, if that's where they want to go, fine. Like, not because there's all these world religions and how do you know which God's right and Zeus and Thor and blah, blah, blah. It's like, look, the best leg you have to stand on is you claim a lack of a belief in a God. If you're not convinced, fine. I think Romans 1 is true, and if you did soul searching, you would find you have always believed in a God, but you've shoved that so deep down within yourself that for all intents and purposes, yeah, I believe you when you say you don't have a belief in a God. Doesn't mean it's not there. It just means you've shoved it down so far that you don't even recognize it. Hey, Brandon. Welcome. Been a while.
Hey, good morning. How are y'all?
Morning. Good.
Good. Good. Just up and about. Got an off day and
oh,
moving around. And I said, let me get some errands done. I said, oh, let me stop by and see what's going on. Hey, everybody, is okay for the most part?
Yeah. I caught up on some sleep, and Steph hates me for it because I guess she did the opposite.
Oh yeah. How about all that sleep, man? That sleep is overrated, man. Being normal and human and stuff. How dare you? Having sleep, man. No, it's funny because you get so used to not having it. When you get it, you feel kind of off when you get it.
Well, yeah. I mean, I was off for a couple of days. Like yesterday, we was at my daughter had a gymnastics meet, and we were all there. And this guy turns around, and he's just like, "Oh, hey, how you been, Nate? Well, I haven't seen you in a whoa. You look tired." I'm like, "Huh? Well, but yeah, I'm kind of tired." He's like, "No, you look really exhausted. Like, you look bad." I'm like, "Well, you don't look so great either." He's like, "Well, I'm just saying, your eyes look really like dark circles under them." I'm like, "Well, I guess, yeah." And I realize, I'm like, "I guess I haven't been sleeping well for a couple nights." So Steph, C, same boat, same team. So I'm like, "Well, yeah." I mean, one night, like, my cat was just being a little crazy thing and like jumping everywhere, and I couldn't sleep, and I had a migraine all night long. Like, I dreamed about having a migraine at like 3 a.m. and then I woke up, and I'm like, "Hey, sure enough, it was a migraine." So then I tried to sleep because I'm like, I don't want to like jump up and take medicine at 3 a.m. So I just like tried to sleep. So that was bad. And then like the other night, my dog had like night terrors. How it's like trying to race in its sleep. And it's like, I'm like, "Gosh, dog, chill out, man. What is going on? You're being chased by like large cats." And anyway, so last night I took some melatonin, which usually gives me kind of weird messed up dreams. But last night I'm like, "All right, I am sleeping."
Night vision.
Yeah, so I took a little melatonin, and man, when it works, it works. Like, yeah, so that's my thing. Yeah, so scary proud papa moment. Yesterday at the gymnastics competition. Hello, Chris. Good morning. Yesterday at the gymnastics competition, my daughter was doing the uneven bars, and there was a couple. So I don't know. Like, I really try to, like, teach my kids. I'm like, "Look, first of all, I don't even want to be here. So like, I'm just waiting for the day you hate gymnastics enough. And as soon as you say quit, you're out. Like, I hate everything about the sport." So right. There's that. So there's that. Two, I'm like, "Look, if you mess up, you do not freak out and be a little butt. You keep going, you suck it up, you finish your routine. Like, as long as we're here, you're going to do it right. So I tried to instill that in them. And like whenever these other girls and their teammates, like, you know, make a little mistake or something, it is like the end of the world. Like the Niagara,
what am I gonna do?
Like, oh, the Niagara Falls of tears are released. And, you know, like they have to get all these like coaches to like console them. And everyone's like, are you okay? I'm so sorry. I'm like, oh my God, if they ever get a boyfriend and they break up with them, they're just going to like kill themselves. I'm like, it's a competition.
You said some
guys, like,
a failure.
But I'm like, come on. Yeah. So anyway, there was one girl who went before my kid on one of it. It was the beam. And, you know, they they're usually really good, but, you know, they slipped and fell off, not in a hurt way. They just missed and just like fell straight down. Like they went under their feet and everything. So there was no pain. But then they got back up and finished, and they were just like freaking out after it was over. Like this very pouty, like sully face, just like they just like sucked on a lemon. And everyone's like trying to console them. And then it's like whenever people try to do that, right, it's like you try to be a good person, like console someone, but then they see that you're trying to be sympathetic. And it's like some weird, like gives them more like power, or makes them feel better.
To
be mean to the person that's trying to help them. You know what I'm talking about? Can you?
I'll be like, you better get your face together. I'm trying to be nice to you, but we will get you in the car and we'll shut this off today. We'll see what those tears do. You better get your attitude together.
Yeah, so you know what I mean.
That was how I was raised. It's like, wait a minute, yeah. You're a child.
So there may not be a term for it, but that was what was happening, right? So she messed up, and then she was inconsolable. People that tried to console her, she was like mean and pushing them away. I'm like, you little butt. So anyway, then my daughter was up on the uneven bars. Oh my gosh, it was like something out of a cartoon. It was like, you know where the like Wile E. Coyote and the Roadrunner, like they'll do something and he'll like run out, and then like the Roadrunner like shows him how he was like standing on what he thought was ground, but it was like empty, and now he's about to fall off a cliff, and his arms and feet start spinning, and they're just like sitting there in air, just spinning, and he falls. That was my daughter. So she was on the uneven bars, and she was like supposed to be going back where she has to like kind of push herself off and like do a big grip and then swing back the other way. Well, she did that, but she went too far the other way. So when she like tried to like choke up on the bar, like she just missed it, and she like let go of the bar, and she just tried to grab it, and she just kept going further and further away from the bar, just like floating in air. And she like starts doing that Wile E. Coyote thing, like her hands are like flailing, and then she comes down and her knee catches on the lower bar behind her. It was the most weird, awkward thing. Everyone's just like, everything stopped, and she like falls down and just kind of like flops and bounces like a fish on the mat. And everyone's just like, oh my God. So we like, you know, run over and everything. And, you know, there were like a few tears, which I get it. It was really bad. But I guess it kind of knocked the air out of her or whatever. And she was fine soon enough. It just took her a little while to like get up. And, you know, we helped her up and move and everything. And, you know, there were some sniffles. But I'm like, okay, look, injuries. Tears are fine on injuries. Tears are not okay because of, you know, you messed up in a routine. That's lame. But, you know, tears are fine for injuries. So there's a couple. Anyway, the point is, sorry, I'm taking too long, but that was my experience. So I'm like, oh my gosh, and now it's on YouTube forever. So, and my daughter, my little daughter, her sister came over and was like giving her a hard time. She's like, runs over. She's like, we got the whole thing on video. Like you're a monster.
This just make it great.
And then so the last thing is after my daughter just like flopped like a fish, like embarrassed in front of everyone, like they had to like stop the whole competition to see if we had like a kid with a broken back or something. Anyways, after she was okay and everyone started doing the routines again, which by the way, my daughter went right back to the next event. I'm like, you sure you want to do that? I'm like, hey, this is one of those times. Like, if you don't want to do it, that's fine. It's like, no, I want to. I'm like, all right, good job. I'm like, proud papa. But then on this other routine, this other girl, the previous one, did a little bit of a misstep and just kind of like lost her step a little bit. And apparently that was the end of the world. So the whole rest of the routine on this floor exercise, she was just like, just had this like angry, hate the world attitude, and like stomped off the stage, and then tears ensued. And there's other girls like crying and people are trying to like hug them. I'm like, oh my gosh, you all are raising just weak people. That's all I got. I don't know. I don't know the point of that.
Yeah.
It can be a little hard. It's sometimes just kind of, I know, like the last 2 weeks, we've had to get my son in I kind of struggle because I've never been a fan of organized sports. for various reasons. But like because it's autism, they have this program that they get them in and help them to communicate, you know, work with others socially. And my wife and I was kind of apprehensive about it because of my feelings of organized sports impact on spirituality. And but I was like, I kind of reluctantly, because the school highly recommended it as far as, you know, helping them with some of those social development type things. But sometimes I was like, I was looking at it, I said, just look, you know how those sometimes how the kids, and I'm thinking, I said, man, these kids handle, you know, they obviously have some challenges, but they handle social disappointment a lot better than what you would consider neurologically the typical children. Because I'm thinking, like, God, these kids are some brats. You know, the children that you would say are neurologic. Like, my son, he didn't quite hit a baseball the right way. He's like, no big deal. Looking at, you know, he just happy. Like, I'm like the neurologically typical kid. It's like, boy, if I could loan your parents my bill right now.
Oh, I think sometimes, like, it's like, man, I mean, can't really do that. I mean, I guess that would be called assault, but man, sometimes you just want to like discipline the parent. It's like, parent, do I need to put you over my knee right now? Like, do control your kid. Like, yeah, I think that maybe the parents need some discipline sometime. But I'm not.
I think that's really the root of the issue. The Bible, what the Bible says, foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction drives it out. I think the parent lacks the correction because a child's nature is to do silly things.
Oh my gosh, you think that'll work for atheists? Like, next time, like, you're talking to an atheist, they're just like, I don't believe in a God, show me there's a God, blah, 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 I'm my own, but just bend them over your knee, just spank them. Like, there you go, now repent, go on your way.
Yeah, with some people I know who've had conversion, and I'm not going to say I'm the most skilled at talking with those who profess not belief, but in some of those I've noticed it seems to be a correlation, it seems to be some type of the equivalent of a life experience of a spiritual spanking that seems to kind of like get them back in line.
Huh. Well, good morning, Steph and Chris. You both came to the stage at the exact same time, so I'm not responsible for any of this. What's up, guys? How are you doing, Steph? How's your day? So you had unfortunate nighttime adventures.
Oh, I haven't slept in about 5 days.
Oh.
Oh, well, I slept Thursday night, and I slept part of Friday. But yeah, there's a stomach bug in the house, so I've been vomited on many times.
Is that one of the little vomiters right there?
Yes, she's very sick. Listen, well, right now she's sad because even though I'm the one that she puked on for 6 hours last night, she's sad because her father just went out the door with the older two, so she's crying da-da, da-da, which is just adding insult to injury. Did I mention I gave birth to her and he did not?
Oh, yeah, man. I'd play hardball right there. I'd be like, hey, look, mommy's here. Mommy, take care of you. If you holler for dad one more time, mommy's going to go to bed.
Okay, if you can figure out how to communicate that to an 18-month-old, that would be very helpful. Thank you.
Oh. I think it's the way with girls, with their dads, like it is boys with moms. Because, like, if it was like really young could have one parent and like one have to be thrown into space. Oh, I'm losing that any day of the week. I'm losing that. Like, yeah, just throw me out in space. His mom's winning that every day of the week.
Yeah, my son likes me more and more as the days go by. The one that's really attached to me is my older daughter, but I think that's because my husband was like not really, he was working like 15-hour days, an hour away. So she just, for 3 years, she got very attached to me, and now she could toss him out in space. But the other two, pretty attached to daddy.
My secret is candy. This was to kind of make, I have to work a lot of time outside of town with work projects and stuff. I make up for it with candy. Children.
Oh, wow.
Children love candy.
That's cheating.
Well, that's cheating, but it worked.
There's got to be something to it. Like, yeah, the relationship like mom, like parents have, like regarding the sex of their kid. It's like if like boys usually what, like do better with like moms and girls do better with dads. But
the Oedipus there's complex.
But there's not that far, Freud. But
yeah, that's my wife. She thinks a lot of stuff is real. It's like, yeah, I said, okay, leave that social work education behind.
But I mean, like, you know, there's something too, like in the dating world. Like, so I don't know if like it's like just observing, like, families around here, right? And there's this, like, people we know, and one couple has a boy and a girl. And so I don't know if it's the individual girl or boy that the mom has a better relationship with, you know, because of those reasons we talk about, or if, like, you know, so it's not just girls and boys, right? Like, because each person is an individual. So I don't know how much individual stuff plays a fact, or if it's just because boys and girls. But anyway, it's like, she, like, dotes all over this little boy. And it's like, you're the greatest thing. He's my little champ. Oh, you're so great. Oh, you're so great, little boy. I'm like, dang. I'm like, can you, like, worship the ground he walks on anymore? And then it's like, the girl, she's just, like, so, like, almost, like, distant and, like, antagonistic toward. It's like, oh, you didn't like that? Oh, suck it up. Oh, yeah, I don't want to hear it from you. Yeah, you just go do something else. I'm tired of hearing you right now. I'm like, oh, my gosh. So it's like, I know they're individuals. But, I mean, looking at them both, it doesn't seem like the boy's an angel and the girl's a holy terror. I mean, they both seem relatively on the same par. So I'm like, is it something wrong with the woman? Like, did she have a mom that was mean to her? Like, I don't know. But I don't know. Maybe that's getting too deep into psychology. But I'm like, she's, like, downright pretty nasty to her daughter and, like, just, like, worships the ground this little boy walks on. And I've noticed that with, like, several people in that situation. I'm like, dang.
Is she divorced?
No, got a husband.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's kind of the mom husband angle.
Well, it's kind of the same thing. Like, the dad, like, worships this little boy, and I mean, he seems fine with the daughter, but just kind of, like, distant and kind of detached. And like, oh yeah, you're great, you're great, sure, you're great, do whatever you want, you're great. Want to play in traffic? Yeah, it's fine, you're great, you're great. So he doesn't seem, like, mean towards her, but he's not, like, all engaged like his boy. He's like, yeah, my boy, he's my little rock star. I'm like, dude. Chris, are you that way with your child, with your man child?
I mean, I only have one kid, so it's pretty hard for me not play favorites. Cause...
You're cutting out.
So it's pretty hard to play favorites because I only got one kid.
Well, I mean, if you had a girl, can you imagine it would be kind of the same? Or, I mean, you probably wouldn't, like, lock them in a closet all day.
I mean, it depends on what they did.
Okay, well, that's true. Get to the sin closet.
No, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm a great boy dad. I don't know how I'd do as a girl dad. Like, I'd be clueless. I don't know what I would do.
I mean, I can tell you right now, like, it wouldn't
it's
be...
It's easier than you think.
I mean, I don't think it would be because I don't know, man. I see all my friends with man children. I don't know if I could handle it. I mean, not I don't know how it would be like interacting with them. I imagine it'd be fine. I mean, I'm not gonna like hate my child, but just like the energy they put off, like they're like little psychopaths. I'm like, I don't. Oh, okay.
Yeah, wait till your daughters are teenagers. Enjoy.
Well, I hear that's coming, but I don't have any lived experience yet. So I'm hoping for the best, planning for the worst. But, I mean, up until this point, you know, girls have been easier. But then I think, well, also, when these little boys are little terrorists, their parents do a really bad job of disciplining them. Like, we were at the pool the other day, and this kid was trying to – well, that's what I'm saying. So these two boys were, like, playing on these rafts and trying to stand up, and it was, like, dangerous and shallow in, and the parent didn't want to, like, hit their head on the side of the thing. So he keeps telling him, he's like – it was very just – hey, don't do that. Hey, stop it. Hey, let's be safe. And like that kind of a voice or even worse. And I'm just like, dude, you told them like 10 times, like do something. And they're like running around screeching, like being little nightmares. I'm like, but wait, so are boys bad because they just have weak fathers and parents? Or if I had a boy, I would discipline the same as I do my girls, which is, look, I'm telling you one time. And after that, you know, we're not going to spare the rod. And after a few times of that, you're going to learn and then you'll fall in line. Or would I try that and it wouldn't work and they'd just be like a little 5-year-old runaway? Anyway, right. All these questions
like,
go through my
there's
mind.
There's like a whole thing with strong-willed children and like, you know, with my son, something would work for like 2 weeks and then he would figure out what was going on and then he would like rebel against that. And so that's the pattern of strong-willed kids is like strong-willed children require creativity and, you know, reasoning. There's a great book called You Can't Make Me, But I Can Be Persuaded. And that has been an excellent book for us dealing with my extremely strong-willed kid. I don't know where he gets it. But why don't we ask the lady that is here that has, like, grown sons and daughters that may be able to provide some insight into all of those phases. That's you, Deputy.
Wait, what? Did somebody say my name?
Yeah. I said, why don't, we're talking about all this parenting stuff. You have grown sons and daughters. Maybe you could give us some insight on the whole, like, going all the way from being babies to adults. Like, you know, boys and girls.
Well, my girl's not quite an adult yet. I will say that girls are definitely harder than boys. As teenagers, for sure. With boys, you've got one little penis to worry about. With girls, you got to worry about all of them.
Wow.
Yeah. Sorry. I would definitely say that when they were babies, my boys were definitely more mama's boys. And as they became, probably say 10, 11, they very much became daddy's boys. But then when they got grown and out of the house, they definitely reverted. Like, they're all mama's boys today. But my daughter was definitely, she was kind of both. If she didn't feel good, or she was feeling emotional, because, you know, girls can be a little emotional, just a little tiny bit, then mommy was definitely her preference. Outside of that, she was definitely a daddy's girl. And she was a daddy's girl up until the day that he died. You know, I think she's still kind of a daddy's girl. She looks for ways to be like him. I still see her do it all the time. She looks for ways to be like him. So, yeah, I think that probably would have followed through too. She'd have always been a daddy's girl. Especially right now, because right now, you know, we're doing the whole headbutting thing. She's 15, and she wants to be 15 going on 30. And I have to be, no, you're 15.
Yeah, what's this bad age I keep hearing? I mean, I'm sure it varies by like a year or two, depending on girl. But like mine's closer to 12 than 11. So am I down to like probably months before things really get bad?
I'd say you're probably down to, you know, no more than a year. I think between 13 and 14 is where she really kind of, they kind of go from just like that innocent kid, to, hey, like I'm becoming grown, you know, and suddenly like they're wanting their privacy. I'd say for my daughter, it happened between 13 and 14. And my daughter, she's a good kid. She's a straight A student. She's a good kid. She does not, she's not problematic in a lot of ways that her counterparts that we're familiar with are, but it's still hard. It's hard. I don't know if maybe it seems harder to me this time around either, because I'm doing it alone. You know, me and their dad were always really good about good cop, bad cop, and we could alternate. And I don't have somebody to alternate with now. So that might be part of why my perspective on her is a little bit different too.
And like you were saying, like you got to worry about all of the boys. Yes. the other day I was coming out of the gym in our little clubhouse area, and I was going to go into the showers, and on my way, my girls were in like this aerobics type room, like doing gymnastics, right next to the entrance to the showers mm-hmm. and locker room area. So I'm ready to walk in. And, as I'm going in, like we saw previously, like probably like 12 or 13 year olds, I'm guessing, like girl and a boy. And they were trying to like look for a way to get into this clubhouse. They didn't have a key. They shouldn't have been there anyways. So we just saw them kind of like walking around. They're like, my kids are like, what are they doing? They shouldn't be here. I'm like, yeah, those are people whose parents don't love them. like joking. I'm being funny, but also maybe serious. Anyway, but then we saw them later, and I was going into the locker room, and as I was going in, this boy and girl, like 12 or 13, couldn't have been more than that, are coming out of the men's like locker room shower area. I'm like, whoa, I'm sure nothing good happened there. And I turn around and like my kids, their eyes, there's like staring in the windows and their eyes are like bulging out of their head there. And so after I got out, I'm like, what's going on, guys? Like, what was that? You know, that girl was in the boys' locker room. I'm like, what do you think of that? They're like, she shouldn't have been there. I'm like, right. I'm like, crap, that was awkward. I'm like, you're never going to do anything like that, right? They're like, no, never. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to have to lock you in a convent for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Michael, were you ever locked in a sin closet when you were a child? And is that why you are no longer a Christian?
No, never locked in a sin closet. I have to say, I agree almost without caveat everything that Serendipity said. For my daughter, who's now almost 27. It was 13-ish, maybe 14, before the proverbial horns came out of her head. And she decided, I mean, if you ever want to, and I think it's probably true, although I've never had a son, it's probably true of boys as well. You know, it's like, that seems to be the age, at least through experience, where, you know, it's like the kids turn into people that are pretty sure they know, that they already know everything. Just ask them, they'll tell you. And that you don't have the first clue what's going on. And yeah, it gets really challenging. I also agree with what she said about having to, you know, how to kind of having to safeguard against all the, you know, against all the boys, because yeah, there is this thing, and it's still somewhat prevalent, although I think in some areas it's gotten a little bit better, is that, oh, you know, boys will be boys. And it's like, no, that's not okay. You know, teach your boys to not be little, you know, little, sorry, almost let a bomb drop there on your show.
I would have agreed with that bomb. I mean, maybe not the bomb dropping, but what the bomb was, I probably would have agreed. I feel the same.
Yeah. So, so there is that kind of thing, right? But you know, it's a tricky kind of thing. I think the one thing, okay, if I was going to disagree with something Serendipity said, my daughter's mother and I divorced when she was 7. But even up until then, I was very much against the good cop, bad cop. I believe very much, because what my parents did was they were in absolute solidarity together. Like I would go, cause I mean, like I grew up with, it was 5 of us. There's me and four girls. And I would sometimes, you know, you're a kid, you know, you try to mess around. You're going to get away with exactly what you think you can get away with. And so I would go to either my mom or my dad and say, hey, can I do A, B, C, X, Y, Z? And the first words out of their mouth would be, if I went to my dad, it'd be, what did your mother say? And if I went to my mom, it'd be, what did your father say? And I knew I couldn't lie to them because they were going to check with each other. And if they said, well, they already said no, I'm like, well, what are you asking me for? You already told me.
We just had that experience.
The answer is no. Right. And so, I never agree with the whole good cop, bad cop thing. Like, I think parents should be in solidarity.
Well,
bad cop, worse cop.
It's one of the things. And I'm not saying, you know, that you can't necessarily, that you can never do things like that. But it's just, like I said, just been my experience.
And let me clarify, too, because I do agree with you, Michael. I think that united front is extremely important for children. Like, you have to put up a united front with your partner always. Like, if they detect that there's division amongst you, they're absolutely going to hone in on that. By good cop, bad cop, I just more or less essentially meant sometimes I was the one that had to seem difficult and unbudging. Whereas my husband was the one that was like, you know, your mom is right. I know that, you know, I know you don't like it, but he would be more the placating one to them about the decision. Whereas I was, no, absolutely not. And sometimes he had to be the one that, no, I'm, you know, I'm digging my toes in the sand. This is, I won't budge on this. And so I had to be more the placating, you know, your dad's right. I know you don't like it, but probably more hard cop, soft cop.
I get that. And it's funny because it was one of the things. It wasn't the only thing. It was a myriad of circumstances. But it was partially mine and my ex's inability to effectively parent together because we seemingly couldn't be on the same page. That led to the end of our marriage, because there was this whole thing. You know, I'm not going to get into the whole this is why I left my ex, the kind of thing. But that was one of the things that caused a problem for sure. was this, you know, this not being on the same page, which is because you said it, right? Because you said it, right? Like if you show weakness, like if you know, it's like being sharks, like if they smell blood in the water, it's over. And so, yeah, I think we're in totally.
Yeah, it's like prisoners in a jail. Like, yeah, you show weakness, they're going to be all over it. Well, like the boys will be boys. Like, oh, I hate that because people say it all the time. I just need to get out of my community. That's the answer. Every bad thing, like, is around my community. Like, all these people, like, they'll be destroying, like, thousands of dollars of, like, you know, pool furniture or equipment by, like, you know, ripping it or grabbing it and ripping it. Not even, like, jumping on it and ripping it. Just, like, doing it to destroy things. And they're like, oh, why are you going to be in here with your rules? Blah, blah, blah. Like, oh, kids will be kids. Kids will be – oh, boys are just being boys. I'm like, no. Why is it every time – like, used to you would say that, and it's like, oh, boys will be boys whenever they're, like, you know, making a mess or, like, you know, playing in mud. And it's like, oh, boys will be boys, and everyone laughs, right? Now it's like, whenever you say that, it's like the worst possible line. It's like, oh, boys will be boys. It's like they're destroying – they've done $2,000 of damage for no other reason than to destroy. No, boys are not being boys. Boys are being little criminals. Like, stop it. Like boys will be boys. Oh, if there's, like, roughhousing and playing and someone gets, like, a you know, bloody lip. It's like, oh, that's the time to be like, oh, boys will be boys. If they're, like, bashing TVs and, like, throwing pool table balls and, like, glass windows, that's not boys being boys. That's you raising a demon.
And there's a ton of science, right, but, you know, behind the fact that, you know, girls mature faster than boys do. Like, when I think back to the things that I did when I was a kid, I can't believe I'm still alive. because I did some seriously dumb things. And I've said to people, you know, it's like, get together with, you know, family and stuff like that, younger kids and, you know, teenagers, stuff like that, and be like, you know, don't be what it seems to be your predication to be, and that is, like, stupid. Right? Because boys are stupid. We do dumb stuff. And not that, all, you know, some girls don't do, you know, dumb things. But on the average, if you take, you know, like, it is much more likely for a boy to do something that's going to land him in the ER than a girl. In my experience.
Yeah. Yeah. I think girls are more prone to doing stupid things that end with them being pregnant or kidnapped. And yeah, boys do things stupid to either end up in the ER or getting a girl pregnant.
Well, that's interesting you say that, you know, because I mean, it like the one thing my mom always said when it came to stuff like that, especially growing up with four older sisters, it, you know, the standard theme my mom was, you know, it takes two to tango, right? You know, like there is no, oh, you know, the girl should have been, you know, there is equal responsibility. You know, hormones get flowing, yes, but hormones flow, you know, on both sides of that coin, and it's equal responsibility, right, for the person, you know, for the individual, whether it be the boy or the girl, to say, well, you know, this, you know, this, that, the other thing. I don't have a problem with, you know, responsible young people exploring their sexuality, key being on responsible people, right? Because the, you know, the best thing, and it's been demonstrated actually in a lot of religious communities, Mormons, for example, like in Utah, the teen pregnancy rate, because there's basically this huge admonishment on it, the teenage pregnancy rate in Utah is one of the highest in the country. Because basically, you know, and the best way, and I think the parents in the room would agree with me, the best way to ensure your kid's going to do something is to tell them they can't do it. And that happens a lot with sex as well.
Except when you say, hang on. the first thing is, at what point did it become illegal to spay a human being? Does anyone know that? But Michael, well, you say responsible, but that has different layers, right? Like, I would think responsible means holistically. So, I mean, that would basically, if you agreed with that, would get rid of, like, adolescent sex, because if you're saying responsible meaning, like, you know, protection or something like that, I'd say that doesn't go responsible enough, because, you know, it's not 100%. So if you're going to be responsible in the truest sense, that means be responsible for contingencies. So if you get someone pregnant, you know, the responsible parties, the ones making the baby, should be able to have the money to support that baby. And I mean, then you'd be like, well, get an abortion. And I guess we just won't disagree, or we won't agree. But what, Chris?
I mean, look, it's a very simplistic thing to say that the best way to ensure somebody is going to do something is to tell them not to do it. I mean, we tell people not to do things all the time, like, hey, don't cheat on your taxes. Hey, don't murder somebody. Hey, don't, you know, like, there's all kinds of prohibitions. And the problem for us is that we live in such a sexually charged culture that it used to be common sense that you didn't fool around as unmarried teenagers. And then that went out the window. And, you know, there's always some, and there's always, you know, there, of course, but like in religious communities, like, there's, again, there's lies, there's damned lies, and there's statistics. So instead of doing a battle of statistics, we can just say that there is a prohibition on anything having to do, like, the Bible says, flee sexual immorality. Flee. I mean, and that's what we have to, that's what we have to do a better job of as Christians in teaching our kids. And instead, you have quote-unquote Christian moms. I just read this whole article by a Christian mom that was saying that basically girls having teenage sex is the fault of the mothers more than anything else, because they're literally turning their daughters out as hookers. And she's talking about Christian moms. And this is the problem. This is the, you know, it's like, oh, you know, we're going to
shit on that.
Well, I mean, that's fine, but, like, I mean, you should read the article before you follow the S on it.
Yeah, and I think young girls are having sex. They're having sex because they're lacking some type of physical, emotional connection with their fathers. I mean, that's, we've shown that over and over and over and over and over again throughout history. Like, they're generally seeking male approval because they're not getting it from their fathers.
Now, wait, can we just,
regardless of the psychology though, there is a spiritual aspect to this.
Can we just dial this all the way back to sometimes just kids do stupid things and they think, hey, I saw this in a movie, or hey, people told me this was cool. You know, I have great loving parents, but I'm gonna do this anyway.
Yeah.
All right. That's absolutely what I'm blaming.
Yeah, and it may well be, and I accept the fact that there was some hyperbole in my statement. Like, I mean, you can take it back to, you know, you can take it back to sometimes, you know, like the kids sticking their hand in the cookie jar, you know, because their parents told them not to. I'm not saying, you know, that it's the case universally across the board, regardless of age difference. Chris, it is a little bit troubling when you say, like, let's ignore the psychology. That can be dangerous because we do have to look at the psychological impacts of things. And I'm saying this as someone, you know, who deals, you know, as a mental health care professional. Like, saying ignore the psychology is dangerous, man.
I think you just
psychology is a bunch of nonsense anyway.
Oh,
so
never mind.
You know, yeah. So I mean, you know,
yeah,
there
well,
you go.
Speaking,
that's why I say ignore the psychology.
Is right.
Like,
well,
I,
as
I
someone
believe
who has
95% of psychology is a bunch of BS. So
well, okay. Well, go spend some time in post secondary getting a degree in it, then tell me it's nonsense.
Yeah, I just know that from the metaphysic and the worldview.
You just know from all the studying you didn't do, from all the education you don't have. Sorry, what
no,
was that again?
From all of the world,
from all the education
and
the metaphysics
you don't that
have.
You do not account for, my friend. We've already established this. You do not account for a metaphysic, nor do you account for an epistemology. Neither does secular psychology account for epistemology, nor does it account for metaphysics.
There is
this
no
is
such thing
problem.
As secular psychology. It's just psychology. Oh, I got news for you, friend. People that have PhDs and still use psychology don't use secular psychology. They use psychology. You are now
right.
speaking.
And people
here's
with
my
PhDs
chance. Here's my
use
chance for you, Chris.
Are idiots.
Here's my chance for you, Chris. Go read a book. I'm sorry. I spent years doing that. I have letters. I have professional designations, letters after my name that you do not have. Okay? I'm telling you, you are talking out of an orifice right now. You don't know what you're talking about.
So let me say, Michael, one, do you have the recommendation of a book? Because Chris usually offers a title. Do you have a title of a book he can read? And to be fair, those letters I don't believe are PhD, right? But that's fine because I don't put a lot of stock in that either, because a lot of times people will just throw money at it until, you know, until they get those names. And then there's some of the like dumbest people we all ever meet So, you know, letters with common sense are something to be valued. A lot of
For the record, I do not have a PhD. And not to be too insulting about it, but honestly, psychology for dummies.
Okay. No, that's good. That's good. All right. Let's see. Steph, you want to get in this?
I want to get in after.
Oh, no, I just really enjoyed that experiment of how someone would react when their own argument is tossed back at them, and it was a very satisfying response of not liking it. So, thank you.
Chris, I thought you had the Vipers and Diapers. Was that, I asked for that PTR. Was it? Do you not have the Viper, the little Viper in an eggshell with a diaper on?
No, that wasn't me. I mean, that's Vodi Bakum originally.
No, that's the what you're talking about, Nate. That's an illustration that Jesse's wife did in Procreate. So Jesse has that. Yeah.
Do you know where I can find that? I mean, I never see Jesse ask him. I never see him. Well, anyways, could someone
see if he can send it to me?
Like, that is so good. Like, I really would like that. I only have a limited PTR, so I like recently put all my pictures on my computer from my phone. So I'm like starting.
I wouldn't put it on right now though, because it's become sort of some kind of dog whistle.
It's
for
so
something
cute.
You don't want to be a part of this. Yeah,
you could just Google. You could probably just Google image search that. I'm surprised it wouldn't come up.
Well, it's an original from Jesse's
wife,
I guess.
It's a specific thing. It's original piece of art.
From this guy on here. Yeah. All right. See you.
I think I saw it once. It was basically like a cartoony snake with fangs in I think I saw it once. I don't remember.
Yeah, because Michael, when you saw it, you pointed out that that's not where the snake's bum was.
That's right. Yeah,
anatomically incorrect.
Well, I'm sure there's other versions of it, but like this one specific one, I guess is an original from Jesse's wife. CEO, you wanted in. What's up, CEO?
Yeah. So we were just talking about like how things impact behavior. So like when my wife and I were in Dubai, she asked me after about like the fourth day, how is it possible there is almost like no crime here, right? And I thought there were there's a few things that influence. So number one, they've outlawed porn in the entire country. Okay. Number two, they don't have like public outcries. Like if you have an issue with a waiter and like you're not supposed to yell at them relentlessly, you just communicate with them in a calm way. Number three, clean. Like you go in a bathroom, it's spotless. You go anywhere in the country, it's spotless, and it just makes people feel better about where they are. And then the last point is the social contract there, right? Like everyone understands this is a global city. It's trying to advance. It's trying to do positive things. And that inspires people to behave more positively.
Doesn't it also have to do with excessively high fines and jail time and death penalties and stuff like that?
Very oppressive and evil government that includes morality police.
An oppressive and evil government. I mean, I have to tell you candidly, most people who go to Dubai probably feel freer than they do in the U.S. I mean, it's basically, don't do ridiculous stuff. Like, okay, if you want to rob somebody, murder somebody, rape somebody, then Dubai's not for you. Short of that, you're good. I would agree it's not the best place for serious criminals to go to. Agreed.
So
what if
CEO,
you go just yelling Jesus is Lord in the street? I wonder what would happen.
Yeah, that would get you executed. But CEO,
serious
where
crime or serious
is
Christians?
One of the major hubs for human trafficking in the world. Which city is it?
Feels like Dubai is going to be the answer.
Ding, 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 ding. Look, they have a veneer of nicety, but it is a really corrupt and terrible place. Like, I mean, you as a tourist can be fine, but like, I would never want to live there. Dick.
My roommate from college she went to high school in Singapore. She's from France, but then she lived for a while in Singapore. And she said similar things about it, that everyone was really polite, that it was extremely clean, that it was just like a better place than the United States. But then one night when we were chatting with her, she started talking about things in Singapore that make it that way. like she said, she was talking about how gross it was that in the New York City subways, people would stick their gum to the handrails, which, by the way, is disgusting. If you live in New York and you do that, stop doing that. That's absolutely repulsive. It's the worst thing ever. It's like one of the most evil things you can do is stick freaking gum on the underside of a handrail in a subway. But anyway, she was horrified, understandably, that people were doing this. And she goes, oh, well, in Singapore, if you spit your gum on the sidewalk, it's a $350 fine. Right away, no court. And we're like, what? What do you mean? She's like, oh, yeah, they'll issue you a ticket for $350 right then and there. And then she started telling us all of the other crazy laws and jail time consequences for doing pretty benign things in Singapore. So, no thanks. I'll take the gum. As horrifying as it is, I'll take the gum on the handrail in exchange for not having crazy laws like that.
So Chris, you lied. Dubai, UAE is nowhere ranked near the top of human trafficking. Where the heck did you get that from? I paused to check because I was like, oh, maybe I don't know something.
Where did you just get
but you're absolutely right. I'm looking at the U.S. data, U.S. State Department ranking on it.
Oh, U.S. State Department? Oh, please. They cover up human trafficking. You got to go to, it's the human trafficking organization. I can't remember the name of it. That'll give you the full lowdown, man. Trusting the government? Are you serious right now?
All right, and I also went to U.S. News Report, and it's not there either.
Yeah, man. Just go to the, I can't remember the name of the human trafficking organization. They're the largest human trafficking, anti-trafficking organization in the world. They're based here. They will tell you all about Dubai and UAE. And like, these are meccas. Like, Qatar is a mecca of human trafficking and slavery.
Qatar is very different. Qatar is very different, so I don't know why you're comparing those two countries. And again, like, you're not saying anything from any sort of validated source, because you can't quote it. Like, if you can come back and quote it, great. I'll look it up, by the way, but you're not giving a quote. Number two, again.
Knock yourself out. I'm driving right now, I have read that. I'm not lying about it. So, like, UAE, Qatar... Like, all of these Middle Eastern countries, man, like, these Muslim-majority countries are the quote-unquote mecca of human trafficking. But look it up.
And our government. What? Candace, how are you doing? What's up, Candace?
Hello, guys. I'm doing well. And when I joined, I heard Stephanie talk something about Singapore's train. So I actually went to Singapore, and I also went to... Chicago, like in 2014, and I was just kind of curious, like, why would you rather take the gun instead of like being in a safe place that has a lot of laws? Because what if a person is like autistic and doesn't really know how to use a gun so well? So he or she isn't going to stand a good chance living in a place where you have to always carry a gun around because I do know some of certain people that do not have they're like autistic and they don't have good eye-hand coordination and stuff. And I just felt like living in a place where people are like highly demonized, it's like really dangerous and stuff. And I would rather live in Singapore.
That guy, was it Michael Fay? Is that his name? The guy that, we're coming right to you, Steph. The guy that, 20 years ago now, he was in Singapore, an American tourist, and he thought it'd be funny to spray paint a car, and they, beat him bloody from, however many caning strokes he got, because, I guess that's one way to stop spray painting, but what if you're, Steph, go ahead.
Hi, Candace, nice to meet you. Just to clarify, I was talking about gum, G-U-M, like the candy.
Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry. Oh,
no,
okay,
no
gum.
Problem at all.
All right.
I was talking about how the gum on the handrails in the New York City subways is disgusting. But then my roommate who lived in Singapore said that if you put gum on the sidewalk in Singapore, it's a $350 fine. So I was saying in that instance, I would take the gum stuck to the handrail over a law that feels like an overreach. But your question is still a good one. So I imagine that I just want to make sure that you didn't think I was being so blasé about guns. That would be a totally different conversation.
Tell us more about your undying support for the Second Amendment at all costs.
Well, that's what I'm about to go with. I think that this has a lot to do with what you're used to. So Americans, and Michael will talk about this a lot because he's Canadian, Americans have this thing in their DNA that is built in that I don't think a lot of us even realize we have, that's like, we are willing to trade certain things for other things that seem more important. So, you know, we're built on, there's a great book that I can't remember the name of it. I think it's called America's Revolutionary Mind. And it's about how the Revolutionary War sort of, you know, flavored the water that we're swimming in, right? For the rest of the time that this country exists. So at its base most, we grew up with the idea in America that we will take the gum on the handrail in exchange for not being fined $350. The right for someone else to swing their fist ends at your own nose. So as annoying as it is, they can swing their fist all they want. The second they hit you, now there's a consequence. So I think growing up in that, you get used to it. The idea for me as a born and raised American of living in Singapore where there's laws that what, you know, because then my thought is, what if I'm a single mom and my kid spits gum on the sidewalk? What if I'm in financial dire straits? What if a $350 fine for spitting gum on the sidewalk is not worth it? Like the risk is that you have gross gum sitting around, but then you're not financially impacting people indiscriminately, right? So I don't know. I think it's about trade-off. It's always about trade-offs. And so the trade-offs that Americans are willing to make are much different than the trade-offs that maybe a country like Singapore would make. When you talk about guns, that got very interesting because you said that you lived in Chicago, I think, and then you made it sound like everybody in Chicago has a firearm, and if you don't, like if you're somebody who has a disability or you're not comfortable or you don't know how to use a firearm, you're at a disadvantage. I don't know. I've never lived in Chicago, but I have lived in inner cities, and I don't know that that's the case. So I don't know. I'd want to dig into that with you a little bit more. The stereotype that every American has a gun is not exactly true. We all have rights to one.
We all have three.
We all have three. Well, the Texans and Floridians have enough for everybody else to have at least one. But, you know, so, yeah, I would want to, if you want to go down that route of, like, why are Americans so comfortable with firearms, we could do that. But that might be a different, yeah.
Well, Steph, follow-up question. How many people do you have in your armed militia now?
In my personal armed militia? I'm recruiting the first one today. Now that you mention it, it seems like a good idea.
Oh, I'll join. Do I get a card?
Perfect. Now I have one.
I think it's really interesting. I think it's really interesting. Oh, no, you guys, Nate, I'm sorry.
Oh, well, I was going to say Chris posted, I think, an article, but yeah, we'll let him talk a minute about the source of the sighting. But Michael,
three articles about slavery in Dubai, human trafficking in Dubai. The United Arab Emirates even has an entire website dedicated to why they're trying to vehemently fight human trafficking. Like, I mean,
but wait, one of them is Wikipedia. Someone else try a Wikipedia article on Chris Slater and see what happens.
It's
not going to be me.
It's a quick overview.
Oh, article,
and there's a Jezebeler, which that fits with you perfectly.
And Steph, though, to Michael's thing about how if you want someone to do something, tell them not to. So if you want people to stick gum underneath the handrails, tell them not to, which you did. So now you're guaranteed to have gum under the rails. Yes, Michael, go ahead.
Well, I just think it's interesting just to touch on the, and you know, here's the grenade. To kind of echo what Steph said, kind of about what I would say, I don't understand the American fascination with firearms. It doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't compute. And that's because I'm not American.
Have you ever shot guns, Michael?
Have I ever shot guns? No, I don't like guns. No, I don't like guns.
Well, go shoot one and you'll understand the fascination.
There's a whole other answer to this question, just real quick. It's because it's not in your country's DNA. You didn't fight a bloody revolution. Yeah, yeah.
100%. 100%. Yeah, I agree. But just the whole thing, it's like I can't remember where I read this. It might have been – I can't remember who said this. But there's a part of me that has kind of – like I wish the U.S. would change its gun laws, but it's not going to. And the best example was by this I can't remember who said it. I think it might have been John Stewart. I can't remember who said it, but basically, paraphrased, if Sandy Hook wasn't enough to change gun laws, nothing will ever be enough.
nothing should ever be enough. No, that's a play to emotion. That is erroneous on all counts. No, 100%.
Right.
Someone doing bad, someone doing using a tool to do something bad. If someone cracks someone in the skull with a hammer is not enough to outlaw hammers. No, stop right there. No one should outlaw hammers.
Nate, there are more guns in the U.S. than there are citizens, and you have more mass shootings in the U.S. than you have days of the year.
It doesn't matter. That's like per capita. Oh, wait. Per capita, though, like, look, we have, like, you know, what you just said, more guns than citizens, and yeah, more mass shootings everywhere, but look apples to apples. So compare America to America. America has more guns than citizens, and we also have, you know, lots of mass shootings. Compare those mass shootings per the amount of guns we have. And it's basically like statistical zero. Like we have, you could say a lot of mass shootings, which is what, like several a year that make the news. But compared to the amount of guns we have, if people were that crazy, we should have extincted ourselves. For the amount of guns we have, we should have like 10 to 20 mass shootings every single day. And that doesn't happen. So I think that argument, you can say, well, it's a lot. Everything's a lot. The data is a lot. There's a lot of citizens, there's a lot of guns. And the amount of mass shootings compared to the number of citizens and guns outnumbering citizens, you're going to get like statistical zero. Hang on, there's like one more thing I want to say quick, and then I heard Chris and Steph also want to say something.
I want to rebuttal Chris.
I do too.
Okay, hang on. I'm trying to keep my thoughts together. Yeah, Michael. The reason you're like I hate guns, it's like the meme at this point, but I think there's some truth to it. Maybe not for everyone. But it's like, you know, you find someone that's totally anti-gun. It's like, well, why? They're like, have you ever shot one? No. And you take them to, like, the gun range, and then they turn out to be, like, a gun nut. They're like, this is amazing. Like, I had this liberal, very, very liberal. Like, it would have given you a run for your money, Michael. Moved here about 7 years ago. I've known them for 7 years. They came from New York, and they loved Biden. They loved Harris. They loved Obama. Like, hated Trump. Hated conservatives. Anything to do with it. And then they met me. And I was just like very mild mannered. Like, you know, he didn't even know my political views for a very long time. I was just, you know, answered his questions very CEO like. Anyway, so then at a point though, he's like, well, what do you think about this? What do you think? And so I became more and more known and he started entertaining my ideas more and more. And next thing I know, he's like, dude, I bought a gun. I'm like, wait, what? I'm like, no, you should be trained. And I guess he did. So he like became like a complete, he's like, was anti-2A, didn't think we should have guns. Finally went to a gun range, had an instructor take him through a gun course, and just like that, now he loves guns. Now he's like a uber conservative, like gives me a run for my money, loves Trump, can't stand Biden. I'm like, wow. So Michael, if you don't want to be that kind of person, then keep hating guns. But anyway, that was just a fun anecdote. Chris and then Steph and then CEO, I heard. Chris. Father Chris.
No, I'm good. I mean, just emotional appeals, like, you know, Sandy Hook, et cetera. I mean, one of the thing that made Ben Shapiro very famous was when he went after Piers Morgan for standing on the graves of dead children to make a political point. And he stands by that, even though he's friends with Piers Morgan these days.
Wait, Shapiro stood on the dead kids' graves or Morgan?
No, he accused on Piers Morgan's show of standing on the graves of dead children in order to make a political point. And he was right. And Piers Morgan even acknowledges that now.
Ah, and Steph. Well, just to follow order, there's Steph and then CEO.
Oh, Sarah and Deputy are going to bring it back to the other thing. But I was just going to say that there are all sorts of, when you're looking at gun violence, and we should probably check in with Candace to see if her question was answered. But when you're looking at statistics to see what the actual measure of gun violence is, there are so many factors at play. And Michael, I know I'm preaching to the choir, you know this, but they're also much more likely to happen in gun-free areas, you know? So places where multiple people are armed and it's a more level playing field, you're less likely to have those kinds of events. So there's something there. But also in countries where, you know, firearms are completely outlawed, there's no less, like, it's not like there's less murders overall. There's just way higher incidences of murders by vehicular manslaughter and knife violence. So people gonna people, you know?
And then CEO, and I know Michael unmuted, but Serendipity also says something, and Charles is raising his hand, and then I am going to have to go soon, but let's get everyone in. CEO.
Yeah, so Chris, I would ask if you would kind of maybe be willing to revisit your perspective, because I went through each of your articles. So the first one listed Dubai, UAE, as a tier two country as it relates to human trafficking. A tier two country is a government who do not fully meet the current TVA standards, but are making significant efforts to meet those standards. Other countries on those lists are the absolutely horrifying nations of Israel, Japan, and Aruba. I mean, oh my, what terrible company to be in. How dare they? The second article mentioned 25 women in Africa who had gone through human trafficking in Dubai. You know that there are articles of people in the United States who have gone by human trafficking. So this is just an article. There's no statistical analysis. There's no global perspective. It's just an article about human trafficking. And then the third article you sent said modern day slavery. And are you recognizing that what they're referencing is people getting paid what they think are not fair wages? And do you realize that the exact same argument is often made of people in the U.S. getting minimum wage?
Wow. No, you have no understanding of what you're reading. Like, wow. No, the problem is that they are ostensibly getting paid like a very tiny amount to make sure that they don't get accused of having slaves, but they also steal their passports and give them absolutely no way of leaving the country. And they have to live in these slave conditions. Modern slavery will pay a small salary. It doesn't make it any less slavery. What that makes it is a fig leaf to try to skirt the law. And so construction workers in Dubai who have their passports stolen by their employers and have absolutely no way of exiting the country, they're no less slaves than anyone else. Like, the idea, I mean, just what I would say is maybe do a bit more research on exactly what human trafficking is, how it works in the modern world, especially in the Islamic world. And I think that you'll come to some different perspectives.
And to be fair, I think I think Chris's original point was sex slavery. So I think we can agree, like, no one's talking about wages when we're talking about sex slavery. That's kind of like a different ball game. So I think that was his original point. If I got it wrong, fine. But I think he was talking about like sex trafficking was the main point. But who was next? Was it Dippity?
I mean,
and
then human trafficking.
Okay, Dippity, and then yeah, go ahead.
And I was gonna echo a lot of the stuff that CEO said about them being tier two, and to that point. He is correct, too, in that the areas where the UAE is tending to slip is on the labor aspect of the human trafficking, not the sex trafficking. They've actually, as far as the sex trafficking goes in UAE, they have one of the highest levels of prosecution against sex traffickers. They were one of the first nations over there to establish human trafficking laws. That were prosecutable and punishable by law. So, and they are a leader in prosecuting people on the sex trafficking cases over there.
And Michael, you were next, and then let's check in with Candace to see if her question was answered, and then Charles. Michael, you wanted to say something a minute ago.
No, I forget what it was I was even going to say.
Candace, did that answer your question? Just all of that? Okay, she hates us. Charles, what's
up,
Charles?
Question, too. We took it way down the line.
Yeah, I wanted to say, and I do support the Second Amendment, of course, and I believe in every American's right to keep and bear arms. But at the same time, common sense regulation shouldn't be opposed, and I think that's the problem with the hardcore gun lobby used on the right wing of American politics. They seem to oppose every measure of gun regulation, which I think is ridiculous. Now, I think gun bans are ridiculous. Like, I don't want to ban AR-15s or anything like that. But, I mean, you can't own a bazooka. I can't own an M1 Abrams tank, even if I can afford it. I can't own an Apache helicopter, even if I can afford it. And there's a reason why, because those are weapons of military. And if I'm
that's
able
just
to,
sad.
Hang
you
on, man.
Be
able
let me. To own a helicopter, man.
Well, no, man, not an Apache helicopter, man. I don't need
yes,
to own that.
Yes, with Hellfire missiles, man. That's
yeah,
you
yeah,
working.
That's
American.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely ludicrous. Yeah, but it, can we not have common sense gun reforms like some of the ones that are pitched after we have school shootings like here in Tennessee where I live? They're trying to arm teachers. Like, they're already underpaid, and now you want to turn them into armed security. Like, we have to change our tone. That's all I'm saying. We have to approach this in a common sense way.
Like, what would be one of these common sense laws that you would support, for instance?
Oh, yeah. Like, for example, people able to purchase firearms, and they're really not altogether mentally stable, having some kind of list. And I know that this is when people say, oh, well, you're infringing on the rights to keep the healthcare information private and some everything else. But I mean, if you're mentally ill and you've had several armed incidents with law enforcement, and now you get to just go buy, you know, 50 rifles. I mean, come on, like, you know, society should be able to regulate that. Yeah,
Charles, that's already illegal, right? So, like, if you've ever been adjudicated mentally ill, that is one of the questions they ask you on a license, or not a license, but on your application for purchasing a firearm. Are you not aware of this? Are you not aware that they ask that?
I am very much aware of this. That's not even a point that I'm making. The point that I'm making is, can we make some changes to this? Well, to me, it's a common sense change to be able to craft the regulation in a way that would differentiate between somebody that's been bipolar and been on meds from somebody that's been assaulting police officers with knives.
Well, there's a couple,
and you know, I feel like we should be able to differentiate between the two. You know what I mean?
Well, Charles, there's a couple things. There's a couple things. One of the common sense things about, like, drugs, like, you'd think, you know, you're a drug addict, you have a drug problem, you'd think that's common sense, and we agree, so much so that it's a thing. But you know what happened? Hunter Biden lied, said he had no drug problem, bought a gun, and he's not being held accountable. So, you know, there was talk of holding him accountable, but what happened with that? A big nothing. So, you know, what good are laws if people are not going to be held accountable? So it kind of seems like a two-tier justice system. And hang on. Yeah. And then also, wait. Hang on, wait. I don't want to forget. There's a couple of things I was going to say because I listened for a while. Also, things can be abused. So if you say, you know, high-capacity magazines should be used, and you said after school shootings, like, I don't know if you realize, but you're basically just making a self-fulfilling prophecy. So it's like, oh, there's a school shooting. We need to outlaw high-capacity magazines because that's what was used. Great. Now that's outlawed. Oh, well, after a school shooting, you know, we've downgraded it to 4 rounds in a chamber. 4 rounds was just used in a school shooting. Now we need to make it 3 rounds. Like, you're going to have people who do this. So if they see that it, you know, they get an inch, they're going to take a mile. So they're going to regulate it into oblivion. So no matter what regulation you come up with, you can have people like pay someone or false flags or a political ideologue who would be willing to go test the new boundary in order to further get things regulated. And then the last thing I'll say is this is between what you say common sense laws, which I mean, maybe some people could go down, you know, quite a ways with that argument with you. But then there's the letter of the law. So there are certain unalienable rights, right, that were given by God and all this stuff. So at a certain point, it's like, look, it is the law. It is written. That's why. Right. So like in the Second Amendment, if you want to, you know, and this is the Supreme Court's been busy over the years. But this is the thing. So it's not like the Supreme Court or whatever wouldn't understand, oh, well, if you've been, you know, this or if you've been that. And by the way, they have done what I think are some unconstitutional things because it says shall not be infringed. So you'd think, well, you don't want a mentally ill person. Doesn't matter. If you want to be a constitutional purist, it doesn't make accounts for mentally deficient people. So by the letter of the law, yes, mentally ill people should be allowed to have guns. And if they do something crazy, they're going to get locked up or shot real fast, and it's going to work itself out. And just like that, you have a lot less mentally, people with mental issues, either because they've done some crazy stuff and tried to kill people and got shot themselves, or because people who otherwise would be deemed mentally unfit are like, hey, guys, no, you know what? I'm actually not so mentally unfit. I actually realize that I can't be crazy with a gun. And just like that, mental illness is fixed. That's what I'll say. So it's not just like common sense. It's the letter of the law doesn't allow for it. So if you want to destroy the Constitution that we were founded on, that's what some want to do. But I don't like that idea. Chris.
Yeah. Oh.
I think Chris was trying to say something. And then I'm going to have to go here in just like 5 minutes.
All I was going to say is, like, all of these things, the devil is in the details, right? No one wants mentally unstable people to have weapons. How do we determine who in society is mentally unstable? What if society decides that all Christians believe in a fairy tale God, like Michael would say, that is a mental instability, and now all Christians are not able to own guns? Oh, and by the way, everyone report to this little camp. It's going to be fun, like the summer.
Yeah, I mean, I would say in fairness, like, the issue of the whole statement of common sense gun reform is Chris did state it fairly, that if you end up passing one thing, then it doesn't stop there. Then it's the next thing. So it's going to be a thing where it's Pac-Man, keep trying to eat up all your rights. If the Democrats, I think, would agree to one sort of one-time legislation and then say, hey, we're not going to revisit this topic for 20 years, I bet you would actually get a bill passed.
But then you know they'd revisit it like the month later. Like, give an inch, take a mile.
No, I mean, like, in the bill it says you can't legislate for the next.
Yeah, but that bill would also have, like, you know, $3 trillion for Ukraine and Israel and all this other stuff, too. But and it's like the red flag laws, right? Everyone thought that was a good idea. Even, like, you know, Captain Crenshaw. Ugh, disappointment. But you're like, well, why wouldn't you want red flag laws if, you know, a violent ex-lover says he's going to kill you and your family with his gun? You don't want him to have a gun, do you? Do you? And everyone's like, well, of course not. No, that's dangerous. They should take his guns away. But then you have, all these cases of people, where there's just like a divorce or people break up or it's a vengeful neighbor. And they report people under these red flag laws. And they're like, yeah, they have guns. They made a threat. What was the threat? They said they were going to kill me. Okay, good enough. They show up, the guy's like, what? No, I never said I was going to kill anyone. No, he just doesn't like my political views. And it's like, sir, you seem to be irate. Well, I'm irate because you show up trying to take my guns on lies. Like, of course I'm irate. Sir, now you need to be mentally evaluated. Like, these things are abused more than they're actually used for their intention. So, no, that's why. It's like, this is why we can't have nice things. This is why we can't have what people would like to be, you know, common sense gun reform. Is because of all the people who abuse it to death. Charles.
Yeah, Nate, listen, man, I don't think that just because abuse and political overreach by certain fringe groups that don't represent the general populace, that those things can happen, that we just don't need to have it. I don't think that the answer is, okay, no regulation. Because of these things, like, we have several government programs that benefit poor people, but just because some people abuse them, or just because there's a political overreach by fringe political groups, which there always will be on everything, that doesn't mean get rid of food stamps. I mean, so I still think that a common sense approach, the tuning in to what the majority of Americans are desiring, I think that that's a pursuable endeavor, despite the facts that you're talking about. Because if we're looking at the Constitution at a technical level and we're saying thou shalt not be infringed, well, it talks about the well-regulated militia. But I don't see anybody writing any articles about that.
Steph has one. She just created it.
Yeah, there's tons of articles about that and what that means and the original intent. And, I mean, you can go read the decision on Heller, and that's very enlightening. Like, I mean, there's tons of writing about that, but, like, here's the thing, right, is that the right to bear arms is not a right granted by government. It is a right that is inalienable to all human beings by God, who the government is to protect that right. Same thing with the right to free speech, free association, religion, etc. All of these things are unalienable human rights granted by God to all human beings. And then when we talk about quote-unquote common sense gun laws, how about this? How about we make a pact with the left? When we have just 60% of the gun laws that are on the books today enforced, then we can talk about new gun laws. Just 60% of them enforced. Like, I'm not even asking for much, right? Let's just enforce 60% of the existing gun laws. You would see gun violence drop like a rock.
That is true. Like, enforce the things we've got.
Not to mention, too, like, one of the things that's very oftentimes overlooked when these conversations about gun rights and gun regulation are being had is the fact that an extremely conservative, because it's way underreported estimate, is that 2.5 million crimes per year are stopped by brandishing a firearm that is never fired by either the criminal or the person that's brandishing the firearm. Not to mention over 400,000 life-threatening crimes are stopped because of firearm carrying citizens. So, you know, when you compare those statistics to this, even the statistics of people who succumb to gun violence in this country, it's overwhelmingly in favor of the majority of people who are carrying firearms. More often than not, it's used to stop crimes.
Excellent point. Edwin, you haven't said anything. You want to say something quick before I have to run?
Sure. I don't know if this was addressed already, but my understanding of the Second Amendment is that one of the reasons why it's put in the Constitution was so that the populace would have the same kind of weapons that the government would have to prevent a tyrannical takeover. Is that?
You'll get different people to weigh in. I'm going to say that's my understanding. The whole point isn't for self-defense. Like none of the 2A stuff is ever about. I mean, that's the argument people make now. But I mean, it was not for self-defense or anything like that. It was specifically to be able to overthrow a tyrannical government. That's the point of it.
So yeah. Sorry, I got a call, so kind of interrupted me. So sorry about that. But one other thing, yeah. So about the issue of like helicopters and bazookas. So do you think that the average citizen should be able to, let's say he's mentally well. He just wants to get like a helicopter or a bazooka or, you know, grenades. I mean, because the military has those weapons, do you think that should be permissible? I kind of wrestle with this issue.
So
what do you think? Go ahead.
I want to give two quick answers. One, I want to give Chris's answer that he gives for the Bible. Grammatical, hermeneutical, contextual, you know, all that. Like the same author's intent as you do for context of the Bible. So what was the author's intent? Was it on every level to the annihilation of planet Earth? That would be argued. That should be argued. So, you know, if people can afford nuclear weapons, should they be allowed to have them?
Yes!
Because, was that the author's original intent? Or would it be just for weapons they thought were reasonable for overthrow of a government? So would you need nuclear weapons, or would you need tanks and helicopters? So I think, since they say, right, like that's not one you have to interpret. It says, you know, talks about for resisting a tyrannical government. So like, does a cap gun work? Nope. Need more. Does a AK, you know, AK work? Well, kinda. I mean, it helps a little bit. You know, so do you need bombs, missiles, all the stuff? So I think the author's intent is whatever it would take to overthrow a tyrannical government. So you could arguably right now, you could do that without nukes. So that would just be my armchair thought, is whatever it would take to overthrow a tyrannical government, that should be uninfringed. If the only way to do it is with nukes, then I guess. And, you know, that's where the argument should be about, like, extreme things like that. Because, yes, self-defense is not the goal. Overthrowing a tyrannical government is the goal. So if you can, I mean, you could probably do that with significantly less things than, the best and brightest and biggest bombs that we currently have. All right, Charles, final thought. And I'm walking to shut this thing off as we speak.
Okay. Thank you, brother. The reason why that doesn't quite work is, if I could hop in my DeLorean, hit 88 miles per hour, and go back and grab James Madison and George Washington and bring them back to 2024, would they hold the same energy? Because that's easy to say when everybody's got muskets and cannons. But when we fast forward to today and look at all the advanced weaponry that has been developed, do you think that those men and all their wisdom would want the average citizen or even a state militia or the National Guard in this case to have the same firepower as the U.S. military? I think that they would not take that position.
Well, I guess we'll never know, but you do bring up a good point. We all should have cannons. all right, guys, thanks for being here. All right, have an awesome day. That was fun. Take care, everyone. See you later.